Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare
Hare Hare Hare Hare
राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gobi Janavallabha, Jaya Girivara Dhari, Jaya Girivara Dhari. Gobi Janavallabha, Jaya Girivara Dhari, Jaya Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gobi Janavallabha, Jaya Girivara Dhari, Jaya Girivara Dhari. Jaya Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana, 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 Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Vihari. Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe Jaya Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman 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 Jaya Gaura Nitai 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 Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada
Shupad Paramahansa Parivratakacharya Ashtotra Shri Shri Shriman Abhacharan Aravinda Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Nitila Pravishtom Shupad Paramahansa Parivratakacharya Ashtotra Shri Shri Shriman Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananda Kodi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Saho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasa Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Govinanda Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Mayapur Dham Ki Madhurapuri Dham Ki Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Dwaragapuri Dham Ki Ganga Mai Ki Yamuna Mai Ki Tulasi Devi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Lord Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bodhileshimri Bhaktivedanta Swami Divamini. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Prajarini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Parashyati Deshadharini. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Ajnana Tumirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalagaya Chakshurun Milidam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namam Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadadim Sopadandiyam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudha Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahakanaregunathanyidam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhudam Parijana Sahidam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Nilalidam Shri Vishakhanvidamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagalpade Gopesha Gopika Kanda Radha Kanda Namostude తప్తాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానుసుదే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరి ప్రియే వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధూభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమ కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం నమోస్తు దేవ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధి పుల్లారవిందాయత వత్రనేత్ర యేన త్వయా భారత తైల పూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపాం ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకపాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వత్స సుదీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహత్ వసుదే వసుదం దేవం కంసచానూరమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం భీష్మద్రోణతటా జయద్రత జల గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవతీ కృపేణ వహని కర్ణేన వేళాకుల అశ్వత్థామా వికర్ణ ఘోరమకర దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోత్తీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవై రణనదీ కైవర్తక కేశవ పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానగకేసరం హరికథ సంబోధనాభూదిదం లోకై సజ్జనషల్పదైరహరః ప్రేపీయమానం ముద భూయాద్ భారత పంకజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే మూకం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగం లంఘయదే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం యబ్రహ్మావరుణేంద్రరుద్రమరుదస్త్వన్వంది దివ్యైస్తవైర్వేదైర్సంగపదైర్క్రమోపనిషదైర్గాయందీయం సమగాః ధ్యానావస్థిత తద్గదేన మనసా పశ్యందీయం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుసురాసురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః ఓం శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః శ్రీమతి రాధికాయే నమః సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద relationship with the chapter Raja Yoga in Bhagavad Gita, in order to understand what is pure devotion to Krishna, we were discussing in that connection with the prayers of Lord Brahma to Krishna. Brahmaji, Lord Brahma has spoken about what is bhakti, what is knowledge, what's renunciation in his famous prayers. And towards the end of those prayers now, Brahma is concluding the prayers with a few specific comments on his relationship with Krishna. Esham dubhagya mahima chuda tavadastame kadashai vahivayam bhadaburi bhagaha yetadrishi gachashagai asakalpi bhama sarvadayo mrudja madhumrudasavanteyam. That we talked about this, that Brahma is saying to Krishna that all the predominating deities are the different senses are pleased when the predominant deities are pleased when you serve Krishna. When one serves Krishna, they are pleased by the service to Krishna, because the results of that service to Krishna pleases the demigods, who are the predominating deities of the senses. And he also spoke, Brahma also said, that gopis were the most fortunate people, because gopis had the opportunity to serve all the senses all the time in Krishna's service, with the result that all of them, the deities who are mentioned in this verse, they were all very pleased with that. In this verse, there is something else is also indicated. What it is that the Adhishtatra Devadas or the predominating deities of the senses are pleased by our service to Krishna. Our service to Krishna pleases those deities. On the other hand, not only not serving Krishna, but also by abusing the senses, the predominating deities are displeased by that. Predominating deities are displeased by that. The result of that is, when someone takes birth, sometimes you find a serious handicaps for them. Something like deafness, dumbness. These things are coming from displacing the predominating deities in some previous lifetime. It is a result of that. So this is how Shastras talk about it. Bhagavatam is saying that as much as you please Krishna, senses are meant for Krishna service. Although sense gratification is allowed within the limits of the Vedic injunctions, anyone who has stepped out of the Vedic injunctions and abuses the senses, he has to accept the punishment also. And that punishment comes in the form of the predominating deities withdrawing their support for us in our body, and with the result that we have to manage without a sense in our next life. This is the result of that. It may sound a bit heavy, but that is the way this body is constructed. Body is not a product of simply material elements. It's a product of so many, as we discussed in the third canto before, that so many different demigods have worked to create this material body and give it to us in this form. And it is not meant to be abused. It is meant for using for advancing in spiritual life and Krishna's service. That is the prime goal of the material body. And when we abuse that material body, and if we step out of line with the injunctions of the Shastrams, then the result is that we may have to accept the punishment also.
तद्भूरिभाग्यमिह जन्मकिमप्यणव्यं यद्गोकुलेऽभिकृतमाङ्ग्रिरजोऽभिषेकं यज्जीवितं तु निखिलं भगवान् मुकुन्दस्त्वद्वापि यत्पदरजश्रुतिमृग्यमेवम्.
Ultimately, Brahma is saying to Krishna, that this life I have is only valuable as long as it is in Krishna's service. And if that service opportunity doesn't come, somehow or the other, at least give me an opportunity that I may be able to serve your devotees. Or at least let those devotees walk over me if I take the form of a dust in this Vrindavanam. So, but Brahma has become very humble and was willing to acknowledge to Krishna that there is nothing superior than pleasing him.
तद् भूरि भाग्यम इव जन्म किमप्यणव्यम यद् गोकुले कृतमाङ्ग्रिरजोऽभिषेकम् यद् जीवितं तु निखिलं भगवान् मुकुन्दस्त्वद्वापि अल्पदरजश्रुतिमृग्यमेवम्.
Then somehow the other make me a member of your devotees. That was what Brahma was praying to them, and I would like to continue in that position. I am not in so much in favor of my position as Lord Brahma.
येषाम् घोषनिवासिनामुद भवान् किम् देवरातेति नश्चेदो विश्वबलाल् फलम् त्वदपरम् कुत्रापयन्मुह्यति सद्वेषादिव पूतनापि सकला त्वामेव देवार्पित यथा मार्तसुहृल् प्रियात्मदनेय प्राणाशयास्त्वल्कृते.
येषाम् घोषनिवासिनामुद भवान् किम् देव रातेति नश्चेदो विश्वबलाल् फलम् त्वदपरम् कुत्रापयन्मुह्यति. Brahma says, I can imagine what kind of benedictions you are going to offer to the people of Vrindavanam because of their special relationship with you. And not only that, even the demons like Akhasura, Bhagasura and Valsasura and so on and so forth, that they even were fortunate enough that they were able to offer themselves to you and get liberated from this world. So what to talk about these personalities like the cowherd boys and the gopis who are continuously serving you with love and affection. Even those demonic personalities like other demons who were killed by Krishna, even they were sent back to the spiritual world. What to talk about these personalities who are serving you here now in Vrindavanam. This was Brahma's realization. Will that be sufficient if, Brahma says, will it be sufficient if you give them the same result as you have given to them? No, that will never be sufficient. They are qualified for much higher position. How fortunate they are, Brahma says.
तावद् रागादयस्तेन तावल्काराग्रहं गृहं तावन् मोहोऽङ्ग्रनिकटे यावल् कृष्णनदे जनम् तावद् रागादयस्तेन तावल्काराग्रहं गृहं കാരാഗ്രഹം ഗൃഹം താവൻ മോഹോങ്കൃ നികടോ യാവൽ കൃഷ്ണനദേജനം. സന്യാസീസ് ഹു ഹാവ് നോ അറ്റാച്ച്മെന്റ് ഹെയ്റ്റ് ഓർ ഡിസയർ ഈവൻ സച്ച് സന്യാസീസ് ദ ഹാവ് നത്തിങ് ടു ഗെയിൻ മോർ ദാൻ reaching Krishna. Even their goal is to reach Krishna. If that is the case, how can we offer the same position to the gopis and Vrindavanam? Gopis and Vrindavanam are far more qualified than them because their love is gone beyond even the level of sannyasis. Even sannyasis haven't reached that stage of love for Krishna what the gopis have got. That only thing is that so long as people do not understand Krishna, what will happen is the different kind of material thoughts, particularly ragam and dvesham. Ragam means attachment and dvesham means hate. So desire and hate, these are two opposing elements. And both of them will influence a devotee, will influence a person, and will not allow the devotee to take to Krishna consciousness as long as he has not surrendered to Krishna. So Brahmaji is saying here, that will take away his discrimination. Ability to discriminate will go away. But as long as one surrenders to Krishna, even those disqualifications, they will come into service of Krishna. That is Brahma's point. Brahma is saying that even if they have such bad qualities in them, like ragam and dvesham, even those qualities will come into the service of Krishna as long as one surrenders to them. Therefore, certainly, Brahma says, the sannyasis who live alone and practice the spiritual processes, they are not in the same platform as the gopis are. Gopis are still higher than them. This is Brahma's conclusion. Prabhanjam nishprabhanjobi vidambayasi bhudale prabhanna janadananda sandoham pratidum prabhom. That why is that? Prabhanjam nishprabhanjobi vidambayasi bhudale. That Prabhanna Janadananda Sandoham Pradidam Prabhom. That although Krishna is beyond this material world, Krishna is beyond this material prabhanjam, but still he comes to this world and acts as though he is one among us. That is how his pastimes are. Most of the pastimes what Krishna has performed in this world are like that, as though he is one among the people here, and he acts in that particular way. But at the same time, during that pastime, Krishna gives a lot of happiness to his people, his devotees. They get pleased by Krishna's pastimes. Prabhanna janadananda sandoham pradidam prabho. With that, Brahma concludes his prayers, and eventually before leaving Krishna, Brahma says last couple of verses to Krishna. ജാനന്ദമേവ ജാനന്തു കിംബഹുക്ത്യാനമേ പ്രഭോ മനസോ വപുഷോ വാജോ വൈഭവം തവ ഗോചരം. ബ്രഹ്മ സേസ് ദാറ്റ് അപ് ടു ദിസ് പോയിന്റ് ഐ ഹാവ് സ്പോക്കൻ വാട്ട് ഐ ഹാവ് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റുഡ് ടു മൈ ഓൺ റിയലൈസേഷൻ ഐ ഹാവ് സ്പോക്കൻ അബൌട്ട് ഇറ്റ് ബട്ട് കൃഷ്ണ ബ്രഹ്മ സേസ് ദാറ്റ് ഐ കനോട്ട് സേ എനിത്തിങ് മോർ ദൻ ദാറ്റ് ബിക്കോസ് ഐ ഡോണ്ട് നോ എനിത്തിങ് മോർ ദൻ ദാറ്റ് ഡിഫറെന്റ് പീപ്പിൾ സേ ദാറ്റ് ദേ ഹാവ് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റുഡ് യു ഐ ഡോണ്ട് നോ അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് ബ്രഹ്മ സേസ് ഐ എം നോട്ട് ഷുവർ അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് ഇൻ മൈ ഓൺ ഹംബിൾ ഒപ്പീനിയൻ ബ്രഹ്മ സേസ് that janandamev janando kim bahuktyaname prabho. If they say that they have understood, it's fine. What can I say about that? Manaso vapusho vacho vaibhavam tavagochara. Neither by my mind or my words I cannot say anything further than this, what I have already spoken. Janandamev janando kim bahuktyaname prabho manaso vapusho vacho vaibhavam tavagochara. Krishna's glories, no one can say. Nobody understands Krishna completely to say that this is Krishna. No one can say that. Whatever little thing, what I have understood from my experience, I have spoken here. Brahma says, Janandam eva janandu. Those who say that they know Krishna, let them say what they want, Brahma says. Janandam eva janandu. Kimbahuktyaname prabhavam. What can I say? Manaso vapusho vacho vaibhavam tavagojara. By mind, words, and I cannot go beyond than that, because in the Shastram also, Shastram has only a limit up to which it can take you. After that, it is only Krishna's mercy that gives you the higher realizations. Shastram can bring you to the point from various angles. It can tell you that this is the nature of the absolute truth. And Brahma also has understood in the same way. That is why he is saying like this. Shastram can bring you up to a certain point, but Shastram cannot give you the ultimate truth. The truth has to be realized by Krishna's mercy alone. जानन्दमेव जानन्दो किं बहुज्ञान मे प्रभो मनसो वपुषो वाचो वैभवं तव गोचरम्. So ultimately, anujanihi mam Krishna, sarvam tvam velsi sarvadak, tumeva jagadamnatho, jagade tatta varpidam. Then Brahma says, your knowledge, your opulences, all these things are beyond my, only you know what you have, what you are. We don't know that. Because millions and trillions of universes are coming from Krishna, and they are being maintained by him, and they are eventually annihilated by him. And in that, in one universe, I am here as Lord Brahma, who is actually your servant and taking this position here, and I'm trying to understand your glorious position. So Brahma was eventually concluding his prayers. As the last word, Sri Krishna Vrishnigula Pushkara Joshadayin Shmanar Jaradhijavashu Adivurdhigarin Uddharma Sharvaraharakshadira Shasadru Agalpamarkamahan Bhagavan Namaste. So before concluding, Brahma says finally, that Shri Krishna, addressing Krishna as the Supreme Personality, Vrishnigula Pushkarajo Shadayin Shmanar Jaradvijavashud Adivardhigarin, that you are the friends of the Brahmanas and the cows. That is well known. I have understood that. Brahma says that you are the friends of the Brahmanas and the cows. Shmanar Jaradvijavashud Adivardhigarin, then Uddharma Sharvaraharakshadirachasadruha Galpamarkamarhan Bhagavan Namaste. You have come down here to kill the Rakshasas in this world, which you have completed, you are fulfilling your mission in that way, the purpose for which you have come here. And then, before I leave, Akalpam Akamarhan Bhagavan Namaste. Till the end of this Kalpam, I pay my obeisances to you. So, in other words, Brahma says, I have learned a lesson that never again let these thoughts not come in my mind to come back and to test you. This was my offensive mood that has created this problem. So Kalpagalam, at the end of the Kalpam, up to that time, let me, my thoughts will always be with paying my obeisances to you, as always your servant, and always see you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, Brahma completed those prayers to Krishna. Why did we talk about Brahmasudhi? As I mentioned before, Brahmasudhi is important in the sense that when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, that particular chapter, the ninth chapter, where Krishna spoke about the Krishna spoke to Arjuna about the Raja Yogam, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he says, the confidential knowledge, what Krishna has spoken there, is that kind of devotion what Brahma has discussed here in this Brahma's prayers. So Brahma's prayers gives us an insight into what this Rajavidya is. And that is a very highly highly glorified state of consciousness as devotees of Krishna. So now we'll go back to Bhagavad Gita, where we came from. Bhagavad Gita as we have seen before, that there is a flow in Bhagavad Gita, which you have to get it somehow to your mind, how that flow is happening. When Vedavyasa Maharshi put Bhagavad Gita into Mahabharatam, in the middle of Mahabharatam comes Bhagavad Gita. And in the middle of Bhagavad Gita comes this chapter, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, or Raja Yogam chapter, which is chapter 9. And naturally in this chapter, Vedavyasa Maharshi has put the message of Bhagavad Gita very, very strongly there. Very strongly he has mentioned in this chapter. Therefore, it is important to study this chapter. It's one of the most important chapter in the Bhagavad Gita because of the important message in that chapter. And those who are trying to advance on the spiritual path, they should know how Bhagavad Gita has started and how Bhagavad Gita finishes also. In Bhagavad Gita, you will find Krishna has, there are 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita. As I mentioned before, when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he did not say, oh, I have finished first chapter, now I'm going to start the second chapter. That's not how he spoke Bhagavad Gita. He spoke, it was one continuous lecture to Arjuna. And in that process, Krishna mentioned about Bhagavad Gita, and Vedavyasa Maharshi later on, for our convenience, made it a little bit easier by giving these titles, headlines to, or the different chapters, and making it to 18 chapters.
So normally Bhagavad Gita has 700 verses. 700 verses in the Bhagavad Gita. In some versions you will find a one verse extra, 701 verse. In some editions you will find 701 verse also. That is one verse in the first verse in the 13th chapter. Arjuna Vacha, some questions Arjuna has asked. In some editions you don't find that, in some editions you do find that. But that is not so important, because the questions from Arjuna is actually our questions. Is actually our questions. So, so when Arjuna started the first chapter, Arjuna Vishada Yogam, it's called Arjuna Vishada Yogam. Arjuna raised the questions to Krishna of his distress in his mind, what he experienced in Kurukshetra. That's how Bhagavad Gita begins, isn't it? So the first chapter is Arjuna Vishada Yogam. So Arjuna Vishada Yoga means Arjuna's Vishadam, his distress. That is what the whole first chapter is about. So as soon as the first chapter was over, Krishna takes over and starts replying to Arjuna with the verse begin with Sri Bhagavan Vaja, you will find there. Ashochyan Anyashojastvam Prajnavadam Shabashase Gadasuna Gadasumsha Nani Shochandi Pandidaha. That is the first verse where Krishna comes in and start answering these questions from Arjuna. So what do we find in the second chapter? In second chapter, Krishna has discussed two important topics there. Two important topics in the second chapter. The first and foremost thing what Krishna did was, Krishna spoke about the science of the soul. First of all, the science of the soul. This is very, very important, because if one has not understood the relationship of the soul in respect to the material world and material body, he is likely to be misled in understanding Bhagavad Gita. He would think that Bhagavad Gita is like any other scripture. What differentiates Bhagavad Gita from all the other scriptures in the world is, you will notice this one thing, so many other scriptures, they have been translated into so many different languages, isn't it? If you look at other prominent scriptures in the world, they have all been translated into so many different languages in the world. They have been translated into so many different languages. But then what is the difference with Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is not translated as such. What has happened to Bhagavad Gita is, Bhagavad Gita has been commented by people who have studied Bhagavad Gita. They were inspired by the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that they were forced to write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Their own realizations from Bhagavad Gita. That is the reason why Bhagavad Gita alone is the only scripture in the world which has got so many commentaries written by different personalities in different countries, in different languages. Thousands of commentaries exist for Bhagavad Gita. This has only happened because of the particular nature of Bhagavad Gita, where the importance is given to the soul and not anything related with the matter. So because of its specific position as the most important literature available on the science of the soul, Bhagavad Gita will always remain as the most eye-opening scripture in the world. The knowledge in Bhagavad Gita is so deep-rooted. When one has taken a little interest to study Bhagavad Gita properly, and one has reflected and assimilated of the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, it is bound to create a reaction from that person to present his realizations to the world. So many people, so many politicians, philosophers and professors, and so many great people, they have studied Bhagavad Gita and they found something inspiring them in their understanding of the spirit soul, understanding of the absolute truth. So except Bhagavad Gita, no other literature has succeeded in this, in creating this genuine interest and inspiration in the people who are looking for some higher understanding of life. And that is the success of Bhagavad Gita. So one who is sincere to understand Bhagavad Gita, he has to devote time and energy to understand what Krishna says. And reflecting on that, and also continuously pondering over it,
one will come to know that Krishna has a lot to say about spiritual life. So, the beginning of second chapter, Krishna started with this powerful message of the soul, which has never been spoken by anyone so powerfully as Krishna has spoken. Even in Upanishads, there is reference to the soul. But nowhere else, anyone has spoken and presented with such an absolute way, such a firm way, that Krishna has spoken about the presence of the soul in the body. With clarity and with proof, Krishna has established that the soul are what we are, not the body. And that establishing that truth, Krishna has done so wonderfully that Arjuna was absolutely captivated by the knowledge in the beginning of the second chapter. Soon after, Krishna has spoken about the soul, the presence of the soul in the body, which is the knowledge. Krishna decided to talk about karma, about action. So in the second chapter, Krishna not only spoke about jnanam, which is also called a sanghyam there, sanghyayogam it is titled, he spoke about karma. And through karma, Krishna wanted to educate Arjuna what karma meant, karma means. Many people, virtually everyone in this world, when they come to this world, they haven't got a clue what they are meant to do. People take different activities according to the needs to maintain the material body or with some other intentions, what they like it. But the very nature of karma and how to handle karma and the implications of karma, all these things Krishna wanted to make Arjuna aware of. Because of that, in the second chapter, Krishna talked about karma and the four karma sutras also. The karmanyevadhikaraste mabhaleshu kadachana makarma balahe durburmado sangosta karmani. The science of karma Krishna has spoken in the second chapter. So this is what happened in the second chapter. So as soon as the second chapter was over, Arjuna's mind started working in a different direction. Arjuna started thinking that Krishna has talked to me about jnanam. He spoke about jnanam. Jnanam means the knowledge. Krishna also talked about the karma. Krishna also spoke about the karma. Excuse me. Krishna also spoke about karma. So, Arjuna's question was, how come, if the knowledge is so superior, why have you pushed me to get involved in karma, in action? Arjuna did not want to fight. Arjuna was looking for an escape route. So, virtually Arjuna's questions to Krishna was, if jnanam or knowledge is superior, why did you talk to me about karma, which is action? And you are telling me that I have to execute karma yogam in as we have discussed, Krishna has explained there. So, in answer to that, the third chapter is actually answering those doubts which has come into Arjuna's mind from second chapter. You can see that relationship there. From second chapter, Arjuna got these doubts. Why should I engage in karma if knowledge is superior? So, Krishna had to explain to Arjuna that although knowledge is superior, everyone is not qualified for that. Nobody has got the capacity to come to that position and be situated in that platform. That is very, very difficult. And for prior to getting there, you have to go through so many other things. And that is why that chapter in Karma Yoga, Krishna talks about the importance of Karma Yoga for a conditioned soul who have come to this world. And that is why you find the whole of third chapter Krishna has spent in making one aware how important it is to execute karma yogam in one's life. Karma yogam purifies a conditioned soul. He purifies, and the person gets inspired to come to take to the process of spiritual knowledge, to Krishna consciousness. So it is with that background that the third chapter was spoken. So third chapter of Karma Yogam was spoken in this background. So when Krishna talked about the Karma Yogam, automatically some other questions came up from Arjuna. You may remember that all these things are spoken not for Arjuna's sake. That is the first thing. Because the intention of Krishna was to educate this world. people who followed afterwards. If Krishna wanted to educate Arjuna, it didn't require all this whole Bhagavad Gita. Krishna could have done that and easily without all this problem. But keeping Arjuna in the forefront, Krishna spoke to us. Krishna spoke to us. So the message is for us. And these are doubts which Arjuna is raising there. They are the same doubts which normally comes to our mind. If you are reading Bhagavad Gita in a normal way, if these Arjuna's questions were not there, then you would have, maybe you may have asked these questions. That is why Vedavyasa has put those questions what Arjuna was forced to ask. So whatever Arjuna has asked those questions, they are our questions. We have to relate with Bhagavad Gita in that way. If we just think that a war happened 5,000 years ago, Krishna told Arjuna Bhagavad Gita, and what do I have got to do with it? This will be my question, first thing. So many wars have happened in this world. And no, it is not like that. This is why Bhagavad Gita is more important, because this war, Mahabharata war, and this message of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is relevant as today as it was then. And it will be relevant forever for the human society. Because we discussed this in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Why Bhagavad Gita is so important? Bhagavad Gita is important because the questions and answers in Bhagavad Gita relates to our own life in this world. Our own life in this world, where what is going on within us, the different demoniac and divine forces within us, they are fighting each other. And what one should do to come out from that in a successful way. These are the reasons why Bhagavad Gita is presented like this. Why Bhagavad Gita is presented like this. So, in the third chapter, when Karma Yoga was spoken, this was in Krishna's mind, that through karma one can purify oneself. And he also spoke in that same chapter about the different nature of karma. And particularly, if you know, study third chapter, you will notice, Krishna says, no one can stay outside karma. One cannot stay outside the karma. Karma is what Krishna calls it as karma chakram. Karma chakram means the wheel of karma. Evam pravartidam chakram. That chakram, that wheel is rotating, Krishna says. You are a part of that wheel. You are moving along with it. If you want to stay away from that, you will not be able to do it. Krishna says that to Arjuna. So, better to understand how that wheel goes on and on, round and round it goes. And that is where the importance of yajnam comes in. To perform everything as a sacrifice to Krishna. Yajna chakram. Or it is also called karma chakram. Evam pravartidam chakram. That chakram works like this, Krishna says. How that chakram works, Krishna explains in the third chapter. So, as soon as you understand that, one has to turn one's life as a yajnam. It becomes a sacrifice. That is what is expected. From that chapter, what is expected is to change our understanding of life. That it becomes a yajnam. It becomes a sacrifice for Krishna. And that, when one is understood, then he is acting like a karma yogi. Your actions are karma yogam. This karma yogam, as I mentioned before, that is different than the karma yogam in the Vedas. In the Vedas, Karma Yoga refers to sacrifices, which was a different scene altogether. But knowing very well, Krishna has changed this, and that is in Krishna's hands, that authority, and a new introduction to Karma Yoga has been given in the Bhagavad Gita. So, with the understanding of Karma Yoga, Krishna says there that how one executes Karma Yoga, how it will not bind a person. And this is the technique of Karma Yoga. How it does not bind a person to this material world. Normally, every karma we perform in this world binds us. Isn't it? It's called bondage. So that bondage, in order to eliminate that bondage, Krishna explains there, perform Karma Yoga. And you will not be bound by this material world. And that science is taught in the third chapter of Karma Yoga. So immediately after Arjuna heard this, Arjuna's mind started working in a different direction. First Krishna spoke about jnanam, now he is speaking about karma, and then he has spoken about karma yogam also. So what is my duty? Arjuna was confused. So that is why in the fourth chapter, in answer to Arjuna's questions, Krishna says, Jnanam and Karmam is not the goal of life. They are the process only. They are the process, but the ultimate goal is Krishna. Ultimate goal is Krishna. So to reach Krishna, one has to understand these processes. That is what Krishna is saying there in the fourth chapter. So fourth chapter talks about the different aspects of karmam. Karmam, akarmam, vikarmam and things like that. And what a very scientific analysis of the activities of karmam. And also Krishna talks about the chaturvarnyam, the four different divisions in the society. Spiritual divisions and in the four varnas and four ashramas. That is also discussed in the fourth chapter. So you can see that flow in the Bhagavad Gita, how it is happening in the Bhagavad Gita. One chapter is the cause of the next chapter. The second chapter is the cause of the third chapter. And the third is the cause of the fourth chapter. And so on and so forth. So if you see this relationship between one chapter to another, and if you read Bhagavad Gita in this way, without pulling out verses here and there, one or two, and start thinking this is the conclusion. Sometimes people say like this, oh, there's only one thing in Bhagavad Gita, it's very simple, there is nothing much to study in Bhagavad Gita. If you ask them what is it, oh, sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. If you know that verse, you understand Bhagavad Gita, what is there to know in Bhagavad Gita. If that was the case, why did Krishna write all these 699 verses before that? What was it? It's a simple thing, it's one can understand that to get to that stage is first of all takes time. One has to understand what Krishna has spoken prior to that. So when we talk something from Bhagavad Gita, without fully knowing the background of that, it may mislead also. And even people have the misunderstanding that I have now completely surrendered to Krishna and everything is fine with me. I am following Bhagavad Gita, I am following Bhagavadam, everything I have understood now. So there is nothing more to do. My spiritual life is complete now. So this is the easiest mistake we can commit. When we don't understand Bhagavad Gita, we'll jump into wrong conclusions. So before we quote Sarvadharma and Paritejyam, it is important to know what is Dharmam and what is Paritejyam means. And then it will make some sense. Otherwise it won't make any sense. It will simply mislead people. And there will be a lot of mental concoctions after that. And that is why it is important to know this flow of Bhagavad Gita. What each chapter is telling us, what's the relationship one chapter to another. As soon as the fourth chapter, Krishna spoke about the important, the goal is Krishna. As when we talked about that chapter, I mentioned also, in Upanishads, the language is like that. Always they will talk about the goal. Otherwise what happens is, if you only talk about the process, you will get stuck in the process. Because process itself is enough to keep a person busy here. So in order to bring the person to be focused on the goal, often they will remind about the goal. Don't get stuck with the process. And if you get stuck with the process, then you will not go further than that. This always happens in spiritual life. It always happens in spiritual life. Very often you will find people, when they take to spiritual life, they'll get stuck somewhere and they'll stay there. They won't go further from there because they think that they've reached the peak. There's nothing I can do more than this. This situation happens. But that shouldn't happen because the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is right up to take you to the spiritual world. If you don't get there, up to that time you have to continue with it. There is no other way. And that is the way it is spoken. For the Paramahamsa, as it says, Puranam amalam yad Vaishnavanam priyam yasmin paramahamsyamekam amalam jnanam param giyade. Till one becomes a paramahamsa, that knowledge is there in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Up to that point, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam has to go on with that person. Till you reach the stage of paramahamsa. Because it's meant for paramahamsas. So, in the fourth chapter, Krishna spoke about the goal. Goal is Krishna, not jnanam or karmam. But Krishna also analyzed karmam there. How the different changes have happened to karma yogam in this world. So in order to explain that, Krishna started from the sun planet, Vaivasvan. From Vaivasvan, aham vivasvade yogam proktavanaham avyayam. I spoke this karma yogam first to Vaivasvan, Krishna says, from the very beginning, millions and millions of years ago. And from then on, this karma yogam has survived in this world with changes happening all the time. And like that it is today, like here, the message has been lost and people have misunderstood so many things, and therefore I'm going to talk to you again about that. And then Krishna talks about Karma Yoga in detail to him and clarify all the doubts of Arjuna in his mind, that the goal is important, process is important, but the goal has to be always in mind. And that way the fourth chapter was spoken. So when the fourth chapter was spoken, that was that chapter was known as the Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yogam. Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yogam. So eventually Karma Sannyasam was spoken. Karma Sannyasam means to giving up karma. And Jnana Sannyasam means to give up knowledge. So which one to follow? Arjuna had the doubts again. Jnana Sannyasam or Karma Sannyasam? This question came up. Arjuna was finding it easier. He thought, are they on the same platform? Karma Sannyasam and Karma Yogam, are they the same? Or is there any difference between that? Arjuna asked this question in the fifth chapter, at the very beginning. Because when Arjuna heard about Karma Yogam, and when Arjuna compared, when Krishna spoke about Karma Yogam and its, and the important things attached to Karma Yogam, Arjuna's mind was working in a different direction. Arjuna was thinking that for a person who has given up karmam, completely sannyasam to karmam, that means karma sannyasam, or given up karmam, why is that better thing, or is karma yogam better? Earlier Arjuna's doubt was jnanam is necessary or karmam is necessary. Now Arjuna's question after hearing about karma yogam is karma yogam is better or karma sannyasam is better? So you can see it has moved a little different, a different direction in the fifth chapter. Karma sannyasam and karma yogam, both questions were raised by Arjuna to Krishna. It was then that Krishna spoke that both are equally good, because Krishna never gives one answer anytime. Both are equally good, and that is how it will be always. It is up to the person how to understand it properly. Krishna wants the devotee to understand things. Krishna does not want to give like in the question papers nowadays in the examination, they'll give you 4 or 5 answers, and then they'll give you put few squares underneath that, and you have to tick it which one is correct. Krishna doesn't want that kind of understanding. Krishna wants devotee to understand karma sannyasam. Krishna wants devotee to understand karma yogam also. And Krishna will say the advantages of both and where it stands by following that process. And Krishna wants the devotee to decide what is good for him. He would not say to Arjuna that do this, don't do that, that's not for you. No. Krishna says karma sannyasam is equally good as karma yogam. But karma yogo vishishyade, karma yogam suits you better. For Arjuna, karma yogam is necessary. Arjuna was a kshatriya, and Arjuna has a duty to perform. And looking in Vedic literature, it's always adhikari bhedam. Adhikari bhedam means based on one's qualification. It's not that the same medicine for all patients. You don't give the same medicine for all patients. It will not work. Only someone may get cured, someone may get more sick. So the reason for that, it is because of that, that the in Vedic tradition there are so many possibilities, and also the person has to know his own position where he stands, and accordingly the medicine is applied or given to the patient. So here Krishna spoke to Arjuna that karma yogam is superior in one sense, that execution of karma yogam is easier than karma sannyasam. Krishna says karma sannyasam is more difficult. If you give up karmam, you are not going to stay peacefully anywhere. Your mind will not stay. And there only Krishna explains about what is a mithyacharam. Mithyacharam means one who falsely declares to the world, I am a sannyasi, but inside the mind is very active with sense gratification. That is the type of people Krishna refers to. In Krishna's philosophy, there is no scope for duplicity. One has to accept what Krishna says and accept that and live accordingly. That is the only option. So Krishna says there that there are people who follow that process and I do not like them, he says. I do not accept them. And similarly, Krishna also talks about those people who have following the process as Krishna has discussed here, and without any, without proper understanding, that Krishna says, so vishishyade, they are experts, he says. They are in the properly situated. So when it came to fifth chapter, Krishna spoke about karma sannyasam and karma yogam and talked about karma yogam a little bit more in detail. And it is only at the end of fifth chapter, Arjuna was a little bit clearer in his head that what is all about karmam. What's all about this about? Karmam. Karmam has been spoken in the second chapter, third chapter, fourth chapter and fifth chapter. So as you remember, we mentioned this before, the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita has been split into three groups, isn't it? The first six is Karmam, the second six is Bhakti and the third six is Jnanam. That is how the Bhagavad Gita's flow is. In there, you will find that you are rising up all the time, right up to the middle of Bhagavad Gita, up to the ninth chapter. It's just like that you are going up all the time and then you are coming down from there to the, towards the 18th chapter. So right in the middle, Bhakti Yoga has been kept. Bhakti Yoga is mentioned in the middle of Bhagavad Gita. And in the middle of that Bhakti Yoga, six chapters, that is from chapter 7 to 12, it is on the ninth chapter, Krishna has decided to talk about Bhakti's highest position of Bhakti, the pure devotion, pure Krishna consciousness. That is what is discussed in this chapter, what we are now talking about, which is called Raja Yoga. So, Raja Yoga is important. And Raja Yoga is the goal, how to reach that state of consciousness, what Krishna has spoken in the Raja Yoga. So here you will notice now, as soon as the fifth chapter was over, Arjuna wanted to know that after executing this Karma Yoga, what will happen? What will happen after that? So when one's mind is purified, Krishna says he is ready for meditation. He can meditate then. He is peaceful then because he is purified. All material desires have slowly vanished from his mind. He has become peaceful inside, so he will be able to sit in one place and execute proper meditation. And that is why immediately after Karma Yoga, Krishna talks about Dhyana Yoga, process of meditation. Why Dhyana Yoga was spoken? Immediately after the Karma Yoga. So the sixth chapter is Dhyana Yoga. Sixth chapter is Dhyana Yoga, how to meditate on the form of Krishna. And that meditation process is explained in Bhagavad Gita in that particular chapter. So you can see the connection from each chapter. And at the end of sixth chapter, when Krishna discussed about Dhyana Yoga meditation process, Arjuna had a little difficulty. Arjuna has finding it difficult that this is practical. Is it practical for me? That was Arjuna's question. Arjuna questions everything very nicely to Krishna. And at the end of that sixth chapter, Arjuna wanted to know what will happen to me after performing the meditation. After performing the meditation, what will happen? So in answer to that, Krishna gives the seventh chapter. That question is answered in the seventh chapter. What will happen if one performs meditation? Through meditation, one will realize. What will he realize? Two things he will acquire, Krishna says. Jnanam and Vijnanam. Two things comes from that. Jnanam is the knowledge of the knowledge of all spiritual knowledge. The spiritual knowledge is called Jnanam. Jnanam means full knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge will develop. But when the same spiritual knowledge manifests in a person, when he realizes it, it becomes Vijnanam. So that chapter, the seventh chapter, is called Jnana Vijnana Yogam. Both Jnanam and Vijnanam will come from this after meditation. Because by now, the person has advanced. He has gone to a higher platform, higher level of realization. And there he'll be able to realize what is knowledge, what is Vijnanam, practical application of the knowledge. All these things are spoken in the seventh chapter. All these things are spoken in the seventh chapter. So you can see one chapter leads to the another, next one. Like that it goes. And at the end of seventh chapter, Krishna says there that the important thing to realize is, Krishna says at the end of the seventh chapter, what does Krishna says? Krishna says that that the few things he mentioned there, adibhudam, adidevam, adiyajnam, a few different things in relationship with knowledge, Krishna has spoken in the seventh chapter, end of seventh chapter. So when Arjuna heard that, adibhudam, adidevam and adiyajnam, Arjuna wanted to know about it a little bit more, understand this. What does this mean? Adibhudam, adidevam, adiyajnam and all. So in while explaining that, Krishna discussed that in the light of the pranavam. Pranavam means om. The letter om is called pranavam. So in the light of pranavam or in the light of om, Krishna spoke that in the 8th chapter. Because pranavam also, which is known as Omkara Upasana, Upasana through Om, letter Om, impersonal way of realizing Akshara Brahmam, Akshara Brahmam, Om is the Aksharam, Akshara Brahmam it is referred to, that this letter Om has the capacity to make a person realized, self-realized. That process Krishna discussed there and answered all those questions also to Arjuna, what he raised in the end of 7th chapter. Not only that, at the end of that chapter, Krishna also spoke about the travel of the yogis back to the spiritual world. He discusses it there, how the yogis travel back to the spiritual world. And that is in relationship with that, Krishna spoke about Devayanam and Pidrayanam. Pidrayanam and Devayanam were spoken in connection with that. So when Devayanam and Pidrayanam were spoken, Arjuna wanted to know what will happen to a devotee. Krishna says that Jnani and the devotee is not controlled by that. It is only the yogis who follow that route. So Devayanam and Pidrayanam is basically meant for the yogis. And also, you know, we discussed at that time about Bhishma's prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in those prayers, it is mentioned also that, spoken also, that Bhishma waited for Uttarayanam to come. And we talked about that also, why Bhishma waited for Uttarayanam to come. Bhishma, being a devotee, would need not have waited for that. But he was also a yogi as well. Sondashwasam uparamal, Bhagavatam says like that. He is in a position to give up his body anytime he wanted by controlling his breath. He was able to do that. So he was a yogi as well. So he had every possibility to control his time of departure. Plus, he had the mercy he was given this benediction that he could give up his body whenever he wanted, rather than forced upon by the material nature. So, at the end of 8th chapter, this is what has happened, that the Akshara Brahmam or Om was discussed, and Krishna answered with Pidrayanam, Devayanam, everything, how the yogis go back to the spiritual world, and in that process we also talked about Bhishma. And it was after the 8th chapter, it is this 9th chapter what we are discussing today. Because at the end of 8th chapter, you will find one verse there. What does that verse say? Verse says like this. At the end of 8th chapter, Vedeshu yatneshu tavasu jaiva daneshu yalpunyabalam padishtam atyedital sarvamidim viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. Krishna says, Vedeshu yatneshu tavasu jaiva daneshu yalpunyabalam padishtam. Vedam, yajnam, danam. Different processes. By studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, performing charity, all these things, Arjuna, that will always give some pious results from that. But a yogi who has properly understood the final goal, as I was saying before, the goal is always important. Generally, people get stuck in one of these things. Say, for example, someone takes to sacrifice. He thinks that performing sacrifices is the goal. Or, like Nrga Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, he start thinking that performing charity is the goal. And he gets stuck with it. Nrga Maharaj performed so much charity that when he got to the body of a lizard and fell into the well, Krishna had to pull him out from there. And Krishna was kind also to him that he got back his original body. He had to become a lizard being cursed by the Brahmana for making some mistake in the charity. But sad thing is, Nrga Maharaj never understood that the goal is not performing charity. Goal is to go back home, back to Krishna. So here, at the end of 8th chapter, that is what Krishna is saying. Vedeshu yajneshu tapasu jaiva daneshu yal punya bhalam pradishtam atyedi tal sarvam idam viditva yogi bhayam sthanam ubaidi jadyam. That yogi has to go beyond than that. He has to go back home, back to Krishna. So in order to present that, in the 9th chapter, Krishna has put that introduction in the 8th chapter itself. Krishna has put the introduction in the 8th chapter, and that introduction for Raja Yogam comes from there. So in the 9th chapter, when Krishna starts the 9th chapter, without any further complications, Krishna talks about Raja Yogam, the pure devotional service to Krishna. Devotional service means pure devotion to Krishna. without any adulteration. When one loves Krishna with full heart, without any material motivation, that pure Krishna consciousness, unalloyed devotion, that what Krishna says, unalloyed devotion, what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that process is discussed in the 9th chapter. And it is in that relationship we spoke about Brahma's prayers. Brahma's prayers in the Bhagavatam talks about pure devotion, knowledge and renunciation, how these three things goes hand by hand. So, at the end of this 9th chapter, what happens is, when Arjuna heard about this Raja Yogam, Arjuna was very excited. You can see that in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see. Arjuna was very excited hearing from Krishna. Arjuna wanted to know, how will that devotion develop, first of all? How will I get that devotion? Because it's not, it is easy to say this, but to come to that platform is very, very difficult. So it is an answer to that. Krishna said that, first, a person who wants to understand me properly, he should understand my opulences. It is through the opulences you get to know a person, what his position is. So that is why immediately after the 9th chapter, Vibhuti Yogam is spoken, the opulences of the Absolute. And when you read that chapter, you will find that see me, Krishna says, see me in all these different things. That is the way to understand Krishna. At the moment, our understanding is that Krishna is in the temple, we are somewhere else. We have no connection with Krishna's understanding. Understanding what is Krishna? And that understanding will come when we understand that 10th chapter, the opulences of Krishna. Krishna's opulence. Everything what you find, yaddad vibhuti malsatvam, mamai tejom shasambhavam, everything what you find in this world, anything that you find as opulent or vibhuti, It is me, they are present. And we have to get that understanding first to understand Krishna's glory. What is Krishna's position? So that is why, in order to bring a person to understand Krishna's, come to that stage of pure devotion, prior to that, one understands Krishna's vibhutis, Krishna's opulences. So when Krishna heard, when Arjuna heard all these opulences, Arjuna was amazed. He was struck with wonder hearing about all these opulences of Krishna. And Arjuna surrenders and says to Krishna at that point that I have committed so many offenses not knowing you, who you are. But after hearing all these things, my mind is now craving to see this, what you have spoken. And in his answer to that in the 11th chapter, Krishna shows his form to him. You see? So how that relationship is going from one chapter to another. In the 9th chapter, Krishna spoke about pure devotion. When Arjuna wanted to know how to develop that devotion, how will that happen to anyone? All of us, we are talking about every one of us. When Arjuna was asking that question, Krishna's answer was, vibhutis, all the great opulences. In Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find Krishna's vibhutis are discussed, or opulences are discussed in detail. Krishna says, I am this. Among the sages I am Narada, among the so many, say, among the horses I am Uchaishravas, among elephants I am Airavatam, among the Maharshis I am Bhrigu. So like that, Krishna says so many, and all of them are great personalities who have pleased Krishna somehow or the other. So wherever you find anything opulent, wherever you find any great qualities in this world, Krishna says you should see me there first. Don't see that it is that person who is there. It is me who is present there. In this way, if we develop that thought process in that way, you will realize Krishna everywhere, in everything. And that is the first step in Krishna realization. In realizing Krishna, that is the first step. That is why Vibhuti Yogam was spoken immediately after the Raja Yogam. And when Arjuna heard this Vibhutis of Krishna, the glories of Krishna, Arjuna wanted to have a vision of that. So Krishna, not being very considerate to Arjuna, seeing Arjuna's state of mind, decided to show him what that form meant. And that is how the universal form was shown to Arjuna at that time. It is called as Vishwarupa Darshana Yogam. So Vibhuti Yogam is followed by Vishwarupa Darshanam. That Krishna as the whole creation. Nothing else exists in this creation except Krishna. We are thinking all the time that Krishna is separate somewhere living in Golokam. We are living in the earthly planet. One day I'll finish earthly planet and go back to Golokam. This is how we are always thinking in our mind. Because that is how we have understood. But Bhagavad Gita is saying to us, in everything, anything and everything in this whole creation, Krishna is present there, one way or the other. All what we require is the eyes to see and perceive that. That process of perception is through Bhagavad Gita, it develops into that, brings us to that situation. So, in that 11th chapter, after seeing the universal form of Krishna, Arjuna was absolutely puzzled and completely baffled by the whole scene, what he saw, and he wanted Krishna to come back to his original form. He could not stand that. That never in his thought, never in his dreams he thought that this was Krishna. He was always having a different understanding. He used to think, hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Sakedi. That is how he has addressed Krishna before. My friend, hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Sakedi. And now the whole fear and feelings have changed inside. Whom I was talking to like this? Was I talking to whom I thought is my friend? Not only that, I have asked him to drive the chariot. I have asked him to take the message to Dhritarashtra before the war. And so many things I have done. And now I realize whom I am. I am who is with me and who is talking to me. And when Arjuna understood that, all doubts have gone from his mind, whether to fight or not to fight. There's only one thing to do what Krishna tells me to do. So the process in which Arjuna is progressing with Bhagavad Gita, along with the way that relationship from one point to another, how it is developing that person, to bring you to the point finally, that in the 12th chapter, Krishna talks about Bhakti Yogam, how to develop Bhakti process. And that is what is discussed in the 12th chapter, Bhakti Yoga process. So, first 6 chapters karma, then the 6 chapters is bhakti. So you can see now, from chapter 1 to chapter 12, how Bhagavad Gita has progressed. If you can keep these things in your mind, it will make it a lot easier when you try to understand Bhagavad Gita in future chapters, in many chapters after. Similarly, there is a connection from 13 to 18 also, with these 12 chapters. So that we will see when we come to that, because that after going through the chapter will be easier to explain that. But one thing we have to remember, that from beginning to end, Bhagavad Gita has a flow. And that flow must stay in our mind all the time. Because when you don't know this flow, what is in the Bhagavad Gita, what will happen is, one day you will read Karma Yogam. Karma Yogam will tell one thing. And then after many weeks, somebody else says to you something. You go and read, say, 12th chapter, Bhakti Yogam. And then you are seeing, it's all contradicting everything. Karma Yogam says to me that I should perform my karma as a yogam. But if I am a devotee, why do I have to read that chapter? I can ignore that chapter. I am only taking to bhakti, which is the 12th chapter. I am following that chapter. So if you start doing like that, then Bhagavad Gita will not be understood properly. Bhagavad Gita, we have to understand in total, everything from beginning to end. And when everything is understood, then we'll understand the position Sarvasarman Paritejya. It is at that time one understand that there is only Krishna exist, my duty is to surrender to Krishna. But without knowing the previous chapters and the verses, 699 verses before that, when we say, I've understood now the essence of Bhagavad Gita, yes, we can say like that, but have we really understood? That's the question. So, Bhagavad Gita is a great literature. It brings us a lot of depth of understanding of spiritual life from all angles. Karma is important, jnanam is important, bhakti is the superior, supermost thing to achieve the final goal is bhakti. To bring us to bhakti, we have to use the jnanam, we have to use the karma, we have to use the yoga, everything to come to that position. So, there are so many instances in the Bhagavad Gita and every verse has to require equally the same analysis. Analysis is required. So, now we will look at it from the 9th chapter onwards. Because 9th chapter is important. We will not go to Bhagavadam now. We will stay with Bhagavad Gita because there is so much to talk from Bhagavad Gita alone. But sometimes, when something in the Bhagavadam is giving a clarity, or the personalities who have practiced this yoga system and who have a deeper understanding of the processes, then it is worthwhile referring to Bhagavatam also. Bhagavatam can give us that the little detailed explanation from Brahma, how he spoke about that in the Brahmastri. So this ninth chapter, which we are going to discuss today, you will notice there that the important thing is, Krishna says there, idam tume guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahidam yajnatva mokshase shubhal. Krishna says, yajnatva mokshase shubhal. So, what does it mean? Yajnatva mokshase shubhal, Krishna says, that I will talk to you this topic, he says, Krishna says, by knowing that from all misunderstandings you will be released. All misunderstandings will go from your mind, because pure devotion is higher than anything else. And when one understands what pure devotion is, one understands things a little bit more clear, what is expected of us. That is what Krishna is saying there. Yajnatva moksha idam tume guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyavem. And people will ask this question, if it is so simple, if it is so simple, why it is so is it difficult also to execute? Krishna says no, it is the simplest thing to execute, and it is the simplest to process also, compared to karma, jnanam and all that. This yoga system in this ninth chapter is easier process. Then what is the difficulty, isn't it? What is the difficulty? So it is an answer to that. One word Krishna has used, and this is the most important word in the ninth chapter. Krishna says there that pravakshyami anasuyave. Anasuyave means one who has no envy. That is a qualification. One who has no envy. Everybody will say, I have no envy. Who? You ask anyone in this world. We will say, somebody, oh, he's an envious snake, we will say. But me? No envy at all. Free from all envy. If we open up this topic and envy and discuss it, it may not be very palatable for everybody, all of us. So, but still we have to talk about it. What does this envy mean? We'll come to that later. But this chapter is so important that every word you pick from Bhagavad Gita and start thinking about it in the light of Upanishads and in the lights of Mahabharatam and all that, you will see Bhagavad Gita is just the cream of it. The very cream of Mahabharatam and Upanishads. That is what is in the Bhagavad Gita. And because it is cream, because our tongue is not so good in tasting the cream, it finds it difficult to understand this cream. We still require everything spoken through stories and everything put it in such a way to suit our taste, isn't it? So that is why we find Bhagavad Gita difficult, because of this. But still, with the help of the Mahabharatam and as well as the Upanishads and all the other commentaries on Bhagavad Gita from the Acharyas, you will have an understanding, and it will make it much more interesting studying Bhagavad Gita. But unless one studies Bhagavad Gita in this light, you will not catch the message. You will not get the message of Bhagavad Gita. Simply to accept, like many people, what they do is, they read the book, they read the translation, they read the purport. And then they say, it is written like this, the purport, this is what I'm going to do. I don't want to know anything what Krishna said in other places. It's all very confusing to me. Let me stick to this purport and I'll do this. And anything else if spoken, they get disturbed. They get confused. And they say, oh, the speaker is trying to bring his own ideas. He's trying to concoct something. Oh, he's not following the books properly. His commentaries are all wrong. He has misunderstood everything. And in this way, problems start. If you stay in that platform, well and good. That can stay like that. But if you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, as millions and millions of great personalities in this world have taken Bhagavad Gita to their heart, and they have understood the greatness of this literature. And if you want to go inside into Bhagavad Gita and to understand Bhagavad Gita, one need to go through the different commentaries and also the what they have spoken about, the different things what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Then, so, in the second chapter, we will have to go back a little bit, because all these things are important in Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, if you remember, we were talked about a few things. Arjuna asked what is the problem with us? Why are we not getting it? This message. Krishna says very simple. Kama yesha krotha yesha rajoguna samulbhava. And this rajogunam is so much inside. And from there comes kamam and krotham. Kamam and krotham. Now, let us understand it a little bit more. Once it so happened, some people were going on a road. They were traveling. And in their hands, they were carrying some fruits and flowers, incense, everything. And they were walking to the top of a hill. To the top of a hill. When they were walking, they were crossing a milestone. A milestone was there. So the milestone saw these people walking very happily with so many articles, paraphernalia in their hand for worship. So he thought that they are going somewhere. Let me ask them where they are going. So they said to the milestone, "We are going to the top of the temple, and we are going to the top of the hill where there is a temple there, and we are going to see the deity. We are going to see the Lord who is worshipped there." So the milestone laughed, it seems. The milestone said to them that, "That's fine. You are going to see my brother, are you?" That was his answer. He has a reason to say that. Why? Because he says, actually we are twins, he says. The deity who is at the temple and me, we were born the same day from the same quarry. When they blasted the quarry, we broke into two. Somebody bought him and took him away. And somebody took me and put me here, and I am here. So you go and see my brother. But one thing I can tell you, he said, my brother, he has lost a lot of weight. He has lost a lot of weight. He has lost the weight. I am here more or less the same. I am stronger the same as before. But you are going, now you should go and offer him all the flowers, fruits and whatever incense, whatever you want, you can take it there and give it to him. Tell him that I am standing here still when you go and see him, he said. So they sent back. So when they went to the temple, they saw the deity there. Now, as far as the milestone is concerned, that deity there is his twin brother, isn't it? They're born in the same mother, from the same stone they have come out. So what is difference is, the person who has carved the deity, he got a stone like the milestone, but he has removed from that stone everything what is not necessary, isn't it? That's what the deity has formed like that. Originally, if you look at the deity, it is a stone lying somewhere. The person who carves the deity, what he does is, he takes away all what is not required from the stone and he brings the form in front of us. Is it not? He brings the form in front of us. And then we see that as deity. We forget about the past. He has become the deity. The deity has come in front of us. So that's how we are able to relate with that deity. Then we accept that, oh, this is Krishna's beautiful form, or Lord Ramchandra's beautiful form, whichever form it is. We accept that, oh, that's the form now. But originally what has happened is the carver has taken out everything and brought that form through that stone. Through that stone he brought that form to us. And then we have, that impression has come to us. Similarly, Krishna says there, the living entity also, there is a lot of unwanted things on the soul, which is a part and parcel of Krishna. So by quality, we also have the same qualities like Krishna. After all, we are part and parcel of Krishna. And by definition, we are Sachidanandam, Sachitanandam, eternal blissful and knowledge. But today, we don't have that feeling, isn't it? We are identifying with the body, and we think that this is what I am. And it is on that perception I am living day after day. But one day, when we become realized, when we are self-realized, what happens is, all these unwanted things from the soul falls off. Like the five material elements goes away. The subtle body goes away, gross body goes away. And one person said, all you have to do to get there is to take away that unwanted weight in us. What is an unwanted weight? That is this kamam and krodham, lust and anger, which is surrounding in our consciousness, and that is what is holding us with the material body. So, when we worship the deity, when we go to the temple, these people were told that actually what has happened is he lost a lot of weight. The deity form has lost a lot of weight. Similarly, we also have to lose that weight in us. And that weight is that what is holding, causing this problem. What is that weight? Kama yesha, krodha yesha, rajoguna samulbhavaha. From rajogunam, so many things have come. And that is in us. And as long as it is there, our qualities are all on the, or not able to pure transcendental nature, that the sattvam in the higher consciousness of Sachidanandam, Sachitanandam will not come to us. That is what that is pointing out. So, the process of Krishna consciousness is getting rid of all these things from inside. And when everything is gone, gross body falls off, subtle body falls off, the spirit soul comes to its true identity as Krishna's servant, part and parcel of Krishna. So this is the process. So Raja Yoga is that process by which it comes, that gets there. So then you will notice that in that verse again, that that the second chapter, when we were talking about that, we mentioned there that the Bhagavad Gita also opens up something else. If you remember, there were six things what was spoken there. What was that? Then Krishna says, how does this develop? These impurities have developed inside. This was Arjuna's question. How did these impurities come to me, first of all? So Krishna explained that very scientifically in the second chapter. What did he say? Dhyayato vishayapum san sangaste shubhajayade sangal sanjayade kamal kamal krodho bijayade krodhal bhavadi sammoha sammohal smridivi brahmaha smridivi brahmshal buddhinasho buddhinashal pranashari. This is how that happens. There are six things mentioned there. What are they? Dhyayato vishayapum san sangaste shubhajayade. That's the first one. Sangal sanjayade kamal kamal krodho bijayade krodhal bhavadi sammoha sammohal smridivi brahmaha smridivi brahmshal buddhinasho. These six things. These are the six things. How Krishna says, gradually a conditioned soul become captivated by the material energy and falls into this illusion. And then he is fallen. And then he is fallen. Then he has to come escape from that. So, sometimes it's also spoken like this. See this Uttarayanam, Dakshinayanam, what we talk about. When we said that Uttarayanam time is auspicious to go back to spiritual world, Dakshinayanam time is inauspicious. Actually, strictly speaking, for a jnani or a yogi, jnani or a bhakta or a devotee, these things have no significance. The reason is that time has actually no meaning. Time, we have given some importance to time. That is why time has become important, isn't it? But if you are a little bit thoughtful about the time, you can see that time doesn't mean anything. What does time mean? When did time start and when will time finish? So time and space are two factors on which we have no connections. But if there was no time, it's also very difficult. Because suppose if there's no time, there will be no salary will be paid every month. Poll tax won't be paid every month, would it? So similarly, for various calculations and maintaining a certain way of life in this world, we have created this thing called the time. Otherwise time has no meaning. Time cannot catch you anytime. And one who has realized, he looks back at time and laughs at it, thinking that this was the demon which was controlling me all along my life, was pushing me. Every morning I was forced to get up, I was running to office. Oh, because I will miss my train. I have to get to the office at 9 o'clock, otherwise the boss gets upset with me. Because he starts looking at his watch, what time are you walking in? So all these experiences we have. But both the man who is looking at the watch and the man who is running, both are fools. But neither of them understand that this thing, what we both are chasing after, has no meaning. So it is this time thing that has become the most important factor in this age, isn't it? So people think that if I live a life, 30, 40 years active working life, and another 10, 15 years retired life, and then die and go, I've utilized my time properly, they say. So much ignorance in us, not knowing what we are, first of all, I'm thinking that I've utilized my time properly. As though time will run out
he does not know that this time another body is ready for him, another whole series of time is available after that. So when there is no realization, when there is no understanding of time, one falsely accepts that time is the controlling factor. Time is definitely controlling us. Only thing is, it is controlling us to the grave at the last minute. Take us to the grave. That is the way time is controlling. A realized soul would not look at time like this. He goes beyond time. That is the way. In the Bhagavatam, all these things are explained very, very nicely. Only thing, one should have the interest to understand. If you remember the story in the 10th canto, there was this personality, Kalayavana. Kalayavana, the name of that Yavana, who was following, chasing Krishna. Who was chasing Krishna, isn't it? You know that story in the 10th canto. Kalayavana and Krishna, this is the only one person from whom Krishna ran away out of fear. That's how Bhagavan says that. Krishna ran away from him out of fear. To show us something, there was a reason behind it. Not that he ran away without any meaning behind it. Muchukunda was staying inside the cave. After fighting in the heavenly planets for many years, Muchukunda came down. Muchukunda was in the cave, lying and sleeping there. And Krishna decided, this Kalayavana should be killed. Kalayavana should be killed. Krishna is running and Kalayavana is following him. In other words, time runs after Krishna. Kala means time. The name itself is obvious that Kalayavana, the Yavana who has the who is actually time personified. Krishna is not controlled by time. That's what it is showing. Krishna is running and Kalayavana is following him. So Kalayavana is following Krishna. And when they entered the cave, when Kalayavana entered the cave and Krishna was in the front, as soon as Krishna wanted to kill the time, he got him killed there and there. Why? Waking up Muchukunda. Isn't it? By bringing Kalayavana into the cave, Kalayavana kicked Muchukunda and Muchukunda woke up. And in the fire of the from his eyes, Kalayavana got burned. In other words, the only person who can help you to escape from time, if you want to escape from time. If you don't want to escape, doesn't matter. But if you do want to escape from time, the only person who can get you out is Krishna. Otherwise, life after life, we have to accept the control of time. Time will catch us. And no matter, as soon as we grow up, even when you are at the, nowadays of course, no, you don't have to even grow up. Even when you start in your, the nursery classes, in the smallest class, even when the baby is 6 months old, the mother starts saying, get in, now we have to go home. We have to go. So the time starts by the time 6 months, 1 year old, to take the baby to the nursing school or whatever classes, whatever it is. From then on, this person is running after time throughout life, is it not? Right up to the last point, when the funeral director sends his coach for the last journey to the graveyard, this is the only thing he is fighting against. This thing called time. Is it not? So time is holding us so tight. Very tightly. What to talk about the old age? There is not a moment in life when you could say that I have escaped time. Can you? Because something is there, always waiting there to control you. This is the state of conditioned soul. Conditioned soul has no freedom to do anything. Conditioned soul has to accept these imposed restrictions on us called time and space. And because it is like that, Krishna says, through this pastime, Krishna is saying there, if you want to kill the time, go after Krishna. Krishna will get you out of this illusory imposition on us called time. There is no other way you can free yourself from the control of time. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's been put through the story, people find it interesting. Otherwise, if you have said these things, people find it very boring. They will say, what is this? This is some mental speculation. Vedavyasa Maharshi did not write Srimad Bhagavatam just to tell us some stories. There are so many storytellers in this world. But through all these different pastimes, there are some great messages to us, the importance to take to Krishna consciousness. And by doing that, what will happen to our own individual life, our own personal life, what that is going to bring about. So when we understand the difficulty in dealing with time, a one who is traveling all over the world knows that this time has no meaning, isn't it? You go from here to, say, to New York, you leave here at 5 o'clock in the morning, you get there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then you start 6-7 hours difference. So this is all kalpana. Kalpana means we have created. For our own conveniences, we have created all this so that our industries can run peacefully and people can run to the factory every morning and be there, clock in, clock out, all these things. We take that as absolute, all these things. But from the Shastri point of view, all these things are making us more and more conditioned in that way. Exactly like currency. What is currency? Currency is nothing but paper, but all faith has been put on to that, saying that this currency will save you, it is valuable. But what happened in the Second World War, when in the First World War, I think in the Deutschmark, the German Mark, when they wanted to destroy the other government, what they did was they flooded the market with currency, and the so-called paper was just worth enough for toilet paper. That's what it was worth for. So, but still, we put all our faith in this currency and different countries, and this is something what we have created for convenience. But strictly speaking, we also know that this has, in genuinely speaking, has no value. But for transactional reasons, we use it as a medium. That's all. Just like so many other things. Marriage, for example. What's marriage in this world? We consider marriage as the anything and everything at the end, isn't it? And that thing, we also have developed so many nice rules and regulations for married life and all kinds of things in order to have some peaceful existence in the society. But otherwise, the person who married to whom, that whole business is over when one leaves the body and leaves this world, everything is over. So like this, there are so many things in this world which have been created for the peacefulness in the society, but from the spiritual point of view, they are not the absolute knowledge, they are not absolute things, they have been done with the intention for bringing some peace into the world. So Krishna says here, anasuya ve, anasuya ve. Anasuya ve means one who has no envy. What is the definition of asuya? Asuya is defined like this: Paraguneshu dosha aviskaranam asuya, it says. Paraguneshu dosha aviskaranam is asuya. Paraguneshu means in others' qualities finding fault. Dosha aviskaranam is asuya. Paraguneshu dosha aviskaranam asuya. That's how it says. So what does it mean, asuya means? Asuya means, let us not go very far. We'll stay at our own home and analyze it, how asuya builds up. Sometimes children don't want to get up in the morning. They don't want to. Nowadays it's particularly important because nobody wants to get up in the morning. Everybody wants to sleep. So the parents are thinking that, oh, my son is not getting up in the morning. What shall I do with him? Somehow the father has come to know and mother has come to know that a devotee must get up. So maybe my son is not a devotee. That's why he's not getting up in the morning. So keeping this in mind, and plus also, he's going to school and he's not studying very well. So the parents are getting upset about it. So what do? Every morning mother goes in to wake him up in the morning. He's enjoying his sleep very well. So mother goes knocking at the door. Every day this becomes a daily routine at home. After some time, the son gets fed up, or the daughter, whoever it is, gets fed up with this morning call every morning. Why is this happening? Because we have drawn a black line on their personality, on their individuality. We don't allow them to live the way they wanted to, they are not allowed to develop properly. We are trying to impose our values on them. This is asuya. paragunesu dosha avishkaranam is asuya. Why is it asuya? Asuya is that, that instead of allowing that person to come forward and to do things in a natural way, from beginning we start imposing upon conditions on that person. This is quite common among the devotee families particularly. Why it's common is, you can see that, not only that, very often you'll find very funny scenes in the temple also. The father brings the son with him. They have traveled probably 30-40 miles on the motorway. Son is probably 3-4 years old. So father is saying to the son, pay your obeisances, pay your obeisances. The son has just come to the temple room, he's looking the whole new things. He's completely in shock. One side he's seeing Narasimha Murthy with a half man, half lion form. And then he's seeing so many other different forms. So he's absolutely in shock, standing there looking at all these different forms. But father is feeling very awkward. My son is not paying obeisances. He holds his head and bangs it on the floor. Say, pay your obeisances, he says. And he pushes the son to pay the obeisances to like that. Son feels a little shaken by this. This, what is this, people pushing me like this all the time to do something or the other? Pareshu guna avishkaranam, pareshu gunam dosha avishkaranam asuya. This is asuya. Asuya builds up like this inside to change everybody else in this world according to our convictions. It's not happening with proper understanding. We are thinking that we have to impose this upon the child and the child is taking to it. Other complaint, child is not studying. So every time you see him, oh, you're not studying anything. Why you're not studying? So as soon as you start this with him or with her, then he start putting the mask in the front. Then he does not want to tell you the truth. Anything, he won't want to reveal anything. The relationship goes in a different way. When he comes home in the evening from school, as soon as he opens the gate and he walks in, you ready to start the studies now? Move into the study room and start taking the books. The child does not want to hear this. This is not what he wants to hear from us at that time. So like this, as soon as you start molding people in this way, immediately it develops into confrontation. And that is asuya. It comes from asuya. Pareshu gunam dosha avishkaranam is asuya. Like this, anything and everything, if you look at it, you will find that there is an element of asuya, envy in everything. It may sound strange that a father can be envious of son. No, it is not exactly in that way. Envy means, asuya means, that he does not want that individual to develop his way. He wants to control that individual's life to that extent that he wants to feel that he is doing everything what I am telling him. Eventually what happens is he does not want to listen anymore. He's waiting for the opportunity to escape from you. But with proper knowledge and understanding, if things are developing, that is not the case. It will be a different relationship. So these things are there. That is why this asuya word is a very difficult word to understand. Asuya is there in everyone's heart. It will come out in different forms, in different ways, with different people, in different conditions. That's why Krishna says there, only when one is free from asuya or from envy, then he can understand Raja Yoga. Then he can understand Raja Yoga. Krishna says here, idam tu me guhyadamam pravakshyamyana suyave yadam anam vijnana sahidam yajnyatva mokshase shubhal. That when one understands like that, Krishna says, then you will know what is Raja Yoga means. When all the material desires are gone away from inside, all other material plans are finished, and when one is want to be situated in one's own true identity in spiritual platform, and then he is ready for Raja Yogam. Up to that point, it is very difficult to take to the Raja Yogam process, because we'll always be that element in us which is taking us away from this thing called asuya. That's why this word is so important in this chapter. That the so we were talking about Uttarayanam and Dakshinayanam also previously. I was mentioning there that for a devotee or a jnani, the six different enemies, what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, kamam, krodham, lobham, moham, madam, matsaryam, the six different kinds of influences on the mind, they are also responsible for our conditioning, isn't it? Our conditioning. Bhagavad Gita, if you study carefully, you will notice there are two elements there. One is the Pandavas and the other one is the Kauravas. Kauravas are all the bad qualities within us, which is within us. Like starts with do, Duryodhan, Dushasan, eventually ends up with Dushala. Or all that do, they are all the baddies. And the good qualities are the Pandavas. They are representing the good qualities, mode of goodness and the good qualities. So Pandavas, along with Krishna, they are fighting these bad qualities, isn't it? And that's exactly what's happening within us also. That these bad and good and bad is fighting within us to take supremacy one over the other. That is our whole life is about, isn't it? That sometimes we are driven in the wrong direction. Sometimes we are driven in the right direction. Why does that happen? When the bad qualities take the supremacy, we go in the wrong way. Avidya comes in. When the good qualities take over, we go in the right direction. Vidya or knowledge comes in. So Bhagavad Gita has a very close relevance with this battle, what is going on inside. That is how we have to understand Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, if you simply think that Bhagavad Gita is a battle which happened 5,000 years ago in Kurukshetra, what I have got to do with it? This will be my question. I am living now, today, in this world, and what relevance has it got with me? And this is that relevance. That everything through Bhagavad Gita, this is what we are trying to understand. That this purification of oneself within the through the process of Krishna consciousness. That Krishna's way of presenting is always very different. If you notice that, you'll find it very interesting. Krishna is very different than all other great personalities who have preached different philosophies. From the very beginning, Krishna was in a very revolutionary way. For example, the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita is a knowledge in the Upanishads, isn't it? Knowledge in the Upanishads is the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita also. But when Krishna presented Bhagavad Gita, he did not present the way like the sages taught Bhagavad Gita. Upanishads. Normally, Upanishads are taught in the forest. In the forest, underneath the tree, the sages, they sat down there with the disciples and taught there. But Krishna has took the whole thing to the battlefield. Krishna decided to teach that in the battlefield. And normally the spiritual master sits on a higher platform, disciple sits on the lower level. In Bhagavad Gita, what do you find? Both spiritual master is sitting there in the front, disciple is sitting at the back on the chariot, isn't it? On the chariot, Krishna is sitting in the front and Arjuna is sitting at the back. And that is how Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Everything what Krishna has done has got a different aspect like this. Even when Govardhana Puja was going to happen, when Krishna came to Nanda Maharaj and spoke to him and to all the cowherd boys, up to that point they were worshipping Indra. Krishna's question straightforward was, have you seen Indra any time? Nobody had any answer. And you are worshipping him, Krishna says. You worshipping this person called Indra without even knowing him who he is. Krishna confused them like this. And Krishna says that to Nanda Maharaj also, so far my knowledge goes, Krishna says, what I have seen is this Govardhana Hill is giving us the rain all the year, throughout the year. Whenever we need, and because of Govardhana Hill presence there, Vrindavanam is getting filled with water and the grass is growing very well. And the cows are able to graze nicely and we are getting enough milk from the cows. And when Govardhana Hill is giving us this service, we want to worship someone whom we don't even know, where he sits, what he does. Krishna asked this question to cowherd boys. Why is this question asked? Reason for that is, when Krishna spoke in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these things, along with that, the message is also there. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is within us here, inside. Just like Govardhana was close to them, very close to the cowherd boys and the cowherd men and Nanda Maharaj and everybody. They knew Govardhana Hill was there. They won't worship Govardhana. They'll go and worship Indra, who is somewhere else. We don't even know where he is. Krishna's question is this. Krishna is saying, I am present within you, in your heart as your super soul. I am present there. And only thing is, you have to recognize that I am inside. But instead of recognizing, you will travel thousands of miles away looking for me. Why? That was the question. That's why Krishna was saying that Govardhana Hill is close to you. don't ignore him first. Recognize that fact first, that he is inside there. And that, let that realization happen first. Without realizing anything, simply seeing from external, think. External thinking that Krishna is not present here, I have to go somewhere else to find him. Krishna says it's not necessary. So, like this, through Bhagavatam, so many important messages Krishna has spoken to us. In the second chapter, idam first up, idam tume gukhyadamam pravakshyam venasuyave jnanam vijnana sahidam yajnatva mokshase shubhal. Krishna says, mokshase shubhal, all inauspicious things will go away and one will come to the with realization of the knowing which you will be freed from suffering. It says, you will be freed from suffering. And then Krishna says that you will notice that in relationship this asuya is a very difficult thing, and to give up asuya is also very, very hard. It comes out in a natural way in the people. And that asuya is very hard. Sometimes, once it so happened that a doctor, I think he was a doctor, who had a son who would not listen to him. He tried to control him as best as he could, but the son wouldn't take any of that. He became more and more rebellious. So eventually this doctor thought that maybe I should take him to a saintly person, maybe he can instruct him. And if he instructs him, perhaps he may listen. This was in his mind. This is how normal, isn't it? When children becomes a problem, they take him to some sannyasi or yogi or guru or somebody like that, thinking that maybe they can tell him and he may change. The householder's anxiety, I'm saying. Householder's anxiety and concern. So that's what happened here also. He took him to a sannyasi somewhere. So, and told the sannyasi, this person who brought his son, he says to him, that my son never listens to anything. He doesn't study. He doesn't show any interest in spiritual life. He has just become a burden and he is so disobedient and indisciplined. All kinds of complaints he made about his son to this sannyasi who was there. So sannyasi understood the situation, that the only business the father has is to complain about the son, nothing else. So he told the father to go away for some time. I'll talk to him, he said. So after father went away, he just spoke to the son in a normal way. Never spoke anything about his character or about his activities or anything. So many friendly things he spoke to him. And when the father came back, the sannyasi told the father that what a wonderful son you have. What a wonderful son you have. I'm not at all surprised. After all, he is your son, isn't it? He said. In other words, he praised both of them, the son as well as the father, and gave the impression to them that to be being positive in that way, telling him that criticizing that person, the son, is not going to help. Rather, he should take a more reasonable approach by accepting him as his son and being a good model to him. That is what will encourage him to understand what you are trying to tell him. But on the other hand, the father's approach was not very positive, and the sannyasi managed to get that point across to him. They went home after that. So like this, we can see in so many instances, you will notice even in the nature, if you observe, just like when, I don't know about here, but in India you will notice that when a cow has given birth to a calf, normally the calf is taken away from the cow so that to milk the cow. But they won't take the calf away from the cow so that the cow cannot see the calf. They will tie the calf a little distance away from the cow, but at the same time cow can see the calf. And when after the milking is over, when they release the calf will come back to the cow, to the mother. Have you noticed how the cow will react to that calf at that time? The cow will start licking on the calf all the time and very freely release the milk for the calf. So that cow's approach is more correct, in the sense that cow was seeing the calf, calf was separated from the cow. But when the calf came back, cow has showered all its affection and love for the calf, And the result was that the calf was more peaceful at that time in the association of the mother. So these are things in the nature to show us. Probably it's only in the human society that we deal with children so harshly. There's no other animal society which is as bad as we are. Even the cats, when they carry their kitten, with its strong teeth it holds the kitten. But the kitten is not feeling the pain. Why is that? Why does the kitten not feel the pain? That is how the material Krishna's energy works in this world. With the same teeth, the cat kills the rats without any difficulty. They are very, very sharp and it can tear apart the body so easily. And with the same teeth it bites its own kitten. Kitten is not feeling the pain. Why is that? Why does that happen? This is the beauty of material creation, Krishna's creation. Just like if you know how much knowledge is kept within the tips of these two fingers, you will be amazed. How much knowledge is there within these two fingers? You will be surprised to see how Krishna has created this body. When you are cooking rice, if you want to check whether rice is cooked or not, all you have to do is to take one grain from that and check with these two fingers. Is it not? And you will know whether the rice is cooked or not. If you want to find out. Those who are cooking regularly, they'll know it. So if they want to find it out. So that means all that knowledge is at the tips of these two fingers. It's kept there. When women want to go and buy saris, have you seen how they buy? They'll take the saris and they just do like this. They'll know what is the quality. They can tell you that. Why? Because at the tips of these fingers that knowledge is kept ready for them. When they count the currency notes, have you noticed how they count the currency in the bank? As soon as they keep going, moving, sometimes touch the water and goes on. But they know very well, and that how the note, by the touching of the note, they know if there is two or one. So much knowledge Krishna has packed at the fingertips, these two fingertips. We are able to discriminate like that. Who has put this there, knowledge there? Who has put the knowledge there? Like this, everything in the material body, everything what Krishna has created is perfect. He has a lot of knowledge packed into that. As soon as one realizes, one can appreciate that. That the beauty of creation. That is what Krishna is saying. That the nature is such that it tells us what we need to know. As all the knowledges Krishna has obviously provided there. Text 2. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitramidam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartumavyayam. This is the highest type of bhakti, the most secret type of bhakti, the most purifying of all methods, which is directly realized, the highest dharma, easy to execute and eternal. That why is it so easy to execute? And why is it so important? It is easy to execute in the sense that if one following this process, one realizes, then one can appreciate that. Otherwise it is difficult. Because Krishna says here that Rajavidya Pavitramidam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartumavyayam, that this knowledge is the knowledge of the soul, isn't it? It's the knowledge of the soul. Rajavidya is the knowledge of the soul. Rajaval Guhyam Iti Rajaguhyam. That is how it is explained. Rajavat Guhyam, the Rajaguhyam. Why it is Rajavat Guhyam? Because it is very confidential and it is the king of knowledge as well. And at the same time, when one experiences directly, pratyaksham, when one is experiencing directly, also it is easy to execute. Anushtanam is easier. It is not so complicated like the yoga system, Ashtanga Yogam and all that, which are very complicated. But Raja Yogam is easier in relationship with that. And there is no, when one has come to that platform, there is no more breakup. What means chuti? Chuti means to fall from that platform. If one has come to that platform, then there is no more fall down from there. It is situated in the happier situation there. There is no breakup at that time. That's what Krishna is saying here. And then, in the third verse, you'll find Ashraddha Dana Purusha Dharmasyasya Barandama Aprapimam Nivartande Mrityu Samsara Vatmani. Here again, Krishna talks about Shraddha. If you remember Shraddha, how important Shraddha is. This Shraddha we have discussed before. If you remember, earlier we talked about Shraddha. How much importance Krishna gives to Shraddha is very difficult to explain, because it is the most important thing Krishna says. Sometimes people tell me that, because it is their own understanding, obviously it comes from their understanding. Some people tell me that, oh, that devotee, you know, he has been to Harvard University, he studied Harvard, he has studied in Princeton, he has studied in this university, that university. So now he has become a devotee. More or less it conveys the impression that all these degrees and qualifications in the university is what that has made him a devotee. That's the way the perception is thrown at you or thrown at me. It is in the same way. What they do not know is that the qualification to become a devotee is not these qualifications. They have no value in relationship with Krishna consciousness. What makes a person Krishna consciousness is Bhagavatam discusses there, Vairagyam. Vairagyam is that makes a person Krishna conscious. It is from that knowledge comes in, and not the material knowledge. Material knowledge has no standing as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. Often Prabhupada explained this in a different way. Once even Prabhupada said like this, that an ordinary farmer in India who is uneducated, who has never went to school, from morning to night he is ploughing the land with the plough and with the bulls, he is more realized than a great professor in one of these great universities, he said. But we will say, if that great professor takes to Krishna consciousness, we will say, oh, he has taken to Krishna consciousness, so he must be very advanced then. No, Prabhupada says, no, he is not. He is just starting the ABC of spiritual life. So spiritual life is not something connected to material qualifications. Material qualifications has no value as far as spiritual life is concerned. That is a completely ignorant knowledge which has no support as far as the spiritual life is concerned. So in order to stress this point, and Shraddha is there what comes in at that time. One who has Shraddha, to explain the Shraddha, we have talked about it before, but I will tell you another interesting story about Shraddha. Maybe it's the stories that makes us a little bit more closer to the understanding. Once it so happened that there was a big concert going on in a king's palace. A concert was going on. So it was in the king's palace, so all the respected dignitaries were invited. Only very selected people were invited. And they were all in the concert, enjoying the concert. So this person who was the musician, he was a great singer, well known, and everyone was relishing the music so much. You know how when they enjoy the music, moving their heads like this and all kinds of things, especially the classical music. If you have noticed, you will know it. But otherwise, even the modern music also is in a different way. But classical music, they have that system. You know, the different ragas when they are sung and all that, it gets into their head and they get captivated by that. So this concert was going on for quite a while, and the king was also absorbed in that along with others. But suddenly what happened was, the minister came in to the king and told him that there is something very important I want to discuss with you, he said. Something important he wants to discuss with you. If you could come out for a minute. So king realized that, you know, the big men, the big chiefs, they have always have something important to discuss, isn't it? So the king had to go out of the palace from the assembly room. So he went out into a conference room somewhere or meeting room, and the minister and the king discussed this, some crisis. It was something related with the administration. They discussed it. When they discussed it, it took about 15-20 minutes. King gave the final decision to the minister what is to be done and decided to come back to the concert. When he was coming back to the concert, his mind was still with the decision what he has made. With the decision what he has made. He has not come out of it yet. So when he came back, he saw all these people shaking their heads and completely absorbed in the... They have completely ignored the king, totally ignored. He has gone out and he has come back. All these things didn't bother them because they were so absorbed in the music. So the king thought for a minute, what are these people doing here? That they have forgotten that they are in the presence of the king. His ego started getting hurt. That he started thinking that they are behaving like this. At least they should know that they are in the sitting in the king's assembly. And there is a way of behaving this and not like that, so relaxed in their way. Like this, the king thought. So what he did was, the king said, as soon as the concert is over, he says to them that, I don't like the way people have acted at the time of the concert. He openly declared this and told them that, I would not like this to be repeated again in this concert. His mind was still hovering on that decision what he has made there. He has not come to this world yet, to the musical world. So he gave them some specific instructions that if I see this anyone doing this in future like this with the head, that the head will be gone, he said. That is how the kings rule, the kings manage like this. So he gave all these instructions and the next concert was going to start. So for this concert, the artist was a much more famous person than the one who had done, because it was a continuous concert going on, different artists were coming and performing. The king has arranged like that. So that when the next artist came and he started his performance, all the people in the assembly who were present there, they were all holding their heads like this. because the music was so good, especially when you know how to relish classical music. Only then you can appreciate it. When you don't understand it, you feel all boring. But those who are absorbed and those who are used to it, they will enjoy it. They can, because you can see some people, I have seen in some of the music festivals, they will start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and finish the next day morning. And they could sit the whole afternoon and the whole night listening to music and not moving from their place once, not even going to the toilet. They'll sit there and listening to the music. That is how much they are affected by that. And classical music, particularly devotional music, and if sung by the great artists who have in their different traditions, they can present a world of completely different than here. And the way they enjoy that music, if you see, without anything to eat, food, drink, no other activity, just the music satisfies them so much. And their absorption, total absorption in that. And it is one of those artists who was performing here in this situation. So when he was performing like that, the king was looking at everybody and all of them were sitting very, very tight. But one among them thought that, I'm not going to keep quiet, he thought. No matter what matters, let me enjoy this music. It has gone into his head so much. He couldn't control. He started moving his head. All possible. And he was totally absorbed in the music. Everyone started looking at him, including the king, that this person even doesn't care for king's instruction. He's ready to hand over his head even just to enjoy that music. As soon as the concert is over, king called him in, told him to come. He told him, you are the real person who knows to enjoy music, he said. Why? Because even at the cost of your life, I've told that your head will be gone. In spite of that, you have decided to enjoy the music. This is Shraddha. This is what Krishna is talking about, Shraddha, here in the Bhagavad Gita. When our mind is absorbed in Krishna in that way, for Krishna consciousness, when we become serious like that person, like the way he was willing to sacrifice his head for the sake of music, when we are able to, willing to do that kind of strength and a commitment in Krishna consciousness, that is, Krishna calls it as Shraddha. So this is the importance of Shraddha. So in order to say, in order to explain the Shraddha, Krishna says here, Ashraddhadana purusha dharmasyasya parandava aprapyamam nivartande mrityu samsara vartmani. Mrityu samsara, because the result what is expected from this is very big. Mrityu samsara vartmani, no more material body after that. So the price you have to pay is also very high. It's not a cheap thing. That's what Krishna is trying to point out. Ashraddhadana purusha dharmasyasya parandava aprapyamam nivartande mrityu samsara vatmani. You cannot come back to me. You cannot free yourself from the cycle of birth and death unless you are serious about it. That seriousness is what is lacking in us. Our understanding is Shraddha is for an hour or two in a week. or a few hours, few minutes in a day. That is how our Shraddha is. And as long as the Shraddha is like that, the results also will be in the same way. So now you know why Raja Yoga is important. Why Raja Vidya, Raja Yoga is important. The sacrifice we have to make is very, very heavy. And it is on that sacrifice that what we get the results also. So what Krishna says there is, Ashraddha Dana Purusha Dharmasya Sivarandava Aprapyamam Nivartande Mrutya Samsara Vartmani. Then, text 4. Mayadadavidam Sarvam Jagadavyakta Murtina Marsani Sarva Bhudani Najaham Teshu Avastidaha. Mayadadavidam Sarvam Jagadavyakta Murtina. The few next verses are very confusing. Arjuna got so confused after hearing these verses. Maya tadamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarva bhudani najaham teshu avastida. You know, children, when they commit some little crime at home, the parents catch them and ask them, have you done this? He says, no, I have not done it, he says. He will straight away answer you without any thinking. He will say, I have not done it. Krishna is talking like that here. Krishna says, I am in presence in all of them, but I'm not there, I didn't do it. That's the mood. If you read these verses, that's what the mood you find there. Maya dadamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matsani sarva bhudani najaham teshu avastidaham. I am present in all of them, Krishna says. In all the living entities, I am present there. But I'm not present anywhere, he says. I don't exist in any of them. How is that possible? That's the question, isn't it? Arjuna did not understand one word, what Krishna said. It's not only our problem, don't get it wrong. Arjuna did not understand. The next 2-3 verses, if you see, Arjuna did not get any understanding of what Krishna has spoken. Maya dadamidam sarvam. Everything what you are seeing is me, Krishna says. Jagad avyaktamurtinam. Avyaktamurtinam. Why does it say like this? We'll try to understand. We have got senses, mind, intelligence. What we are searching after is something which cannot be understood by these three. You see? Neither by the senses, nor by the mind, nor by the intelligence. And this is what we have got with us. So you can see the problem. You are searching after something which cannot be. In fact, in this world, how do we know something? Any knowledge what you acquire here, material knowledge or any knowledge for that matter, this is the three things what Krishna has given us, isn't it? Intelligence, mind and senses. These three things. And with these three things, we acquire material knowledge in this world and thinking that we are very knowledgeable and learned and all that. But the problem here is, these three things has come from that, what? The soul. That is the origin. So with these three, you can't understand that. Because this has come from that. And that is our precarious situation. The whole manifestation of this earth, what is Jagat it is called, it has manifested, it has come from Krishna. But we don't see Krishna, we see the world. You see? We see this world, but we don't see Krishna. Although it has come from Krishna. This is the difficulty. That's why Krishna is saying here, Jagat avyaktamurtina. Without knowing the person who is behind it, you are seeing the result and you are taking it, that as the absolute. That is the biggest mistake, Krishna says. Malstani sarva bhudani na jaham teshu avastidaha. What will happen is, I am present in them, but you are not seeing that. You can't see them. This is the problem. Earlier, if you remember, in Brahmastuti, what did Brahma say to Krishna? Rajvamahe bhoga bhava bhavau yathaha. That Rajvamahe, just like when there was this rope, when suddenly in the darkness, you misunderstood that and took it as the snake, did you not? You took it as the snake by mistake. You touched it and suddenly you felt it is the snake. You felt like that. So where did that experience of snake come from? Where did that come from? It is called Bhranti Pratyayam in the Shastra. Also, Bhranti, a kind of fear that is inside, has built up inside about the snake. Isn't it? You already had a fear of snake in your mind. But it so happened at that particular point, when you touched the rope, that fear overtook and you took that as the snake. Isn't it? That you took it as the snake. Actually, the rope has nothing to do with the snake. The rope has nothing to do with the snake. Rope was lying, it is the rope. Poor rope was lying there. But you have imposed this conception of the snake on the rope. Brahma says there, Rajvama her bhoga bhava bhavayata. That there the difficulty comes that you have misunderstood something, imposed that on that, and up to the point when that situation was not cleared, you have accepted that as the truth. That as the truth. You are still thinking that it is the snake. You are 100% sure that it is the snake that you have touched. Why this example is given is, this is quite common where there are a lot of snakes, that's where you will understand this. That the, often that can happen also, that the fear of snake is so hidden inside, that it came out at the first opportunity, when the right conditions came, right environment developed. So it is only an example to make us aware that in this earth, in the world also, this manifested world, external world, which we are dealing with, we are always thinking, the rope we don't see here, the rope is Krishna. We are only seeing the snake here. And in the snake we are finding that this is the truth. We accepted it like that. The person behind it who runs the whole show is not developing inside. When one comes to understand that, Krishna says, when one realizes that it's me who is present in this world, manifested world, then you will, this world experience will go from a person. He will see me as existing. And that is why that Vibhuti Yogam and universal form and all, this is what is realizing at that time. That it is what Krishna who is existing. Krishna's manifestations in this world, all living entities, all that what you see in the material world is nothing but Krishna's different manifestations. So, mayatadam idam sarvam, idam sarvam, everything is me. Jagad avyakta murtina. That avyakta murtina, it is the form, my form, which is not clear to people are imposed on that, the jagat. Matsthani sarvabhudani. I am present in everything. Na chaham teshu avasthidaha. But they don't see me there, anywhere. We think like that, isn't it? How many of us realize that this world is Krishna? We only see, if ever we see something, glimpse of Krishna, it's only in the temple, when we come to see the deity. That's the only time we think that Krishna is present somewhere in the deity form in the temple. To that extent, we are absorbed in our senses. The senses are sending this message to us all the time. And we have accepted it like that. But Bhagavad Gita is saying that when one is illuminated with spiritual knowledge, he will come to this platform first to see that Krishna is present in everything. Krishna is present in everything, everywhere. And that is why in religion also, first of all, we start thinking that the what we are doing here, this is the final thing of spiritual life. I'm coming to temple every morning. I'm attending Mangala Arati, I'm chanting my rounds, I'm going home, I'm going to work, come home, attend the evening Arati, I go home and sleep. Get up next day, do the same thing. Next day, do the same thing. I keep on doing this every day, thinking that I'm advancing spiritually. But if you understand Bhagavad Gita properly, you will see that even in the temple worship, a stage comes that when one's realization is deepened and when one understands that Vasudevam sarvamidi samahalpa sudurlabha. When one comes to that position that everything is Vasudeva, everything is Krishna, nothing else exists, then for him, where is the difference between the temple and the place outside? That difference also goes away. But still you will find the learned transcendentalists or the great devotees, they still continue the temple worship. For what reason they do that? Great devotees who have realized Krishna everywhere, they don't have to particularly go to the temple to see the deity, to see Krishna. They're already seeing Krishna, whether they are in New York or Washington or anywhere. They'll still see Krishna's presence in this world. And they're experiencing it every moment. So they don't have to run to a temple to see Krishna. But still, they will continue with temple worship. For what reason? Earlier as Krishna has explained, Yadyadda acharate shreshta, tatatadidare jana, sayal pramanam kurude, logastadanu vartade. They will not like to disturb the mind of the neophyte devotees. in order that they all also have to set the examples for others. For the benefit of the world, they will continue the worship in the deity and the temple in order to show the example to the others who come on the same path. So that is Krishna's words. Krishna expects that from them, from those great souls. That is why in the olden days, many great sages, they went to the forest and they lived a life of seclusion and they developed spiritually. And when their realizations have become stronger and they're advanced in their state of consciousness, they were in a position to see that what exists is only Krishna. Krishna's different manifestations in this world. All this hate, anger, friendship, enemy, that is for us. For example, Kamsa thinks Krishna is enemy. Kamsa's enemy. Krishna doesn't think Kamsa is my enemy anytime. Ravana thinks Lord Ramchandra is my enemy. Ramchandra never thinks Ravana is his enemy. That is how that level they operate. They are operating in that level. This is the reason why, even after fighting a whole Mahabharata war, where 6.5 million people died in that war, Krishna was not disturbed about it. That is Krishna's position. Krishna's position. Why was he not disturbed? Because Krishna knows that all that exists is with me. It's me existing in all these different forms. They are not separate from me. Whereas we are thinking, oh, so many people got killed there. Why Krishna did this to them? Because I am thinking I am separate from Krishna, I am separate from them, Krishna is separating from them as well. So like this, we have put a lot of covers or a lot of markings, all these different places, because of lack of Krishna consciousness and lack of realization. When we understand Bhagavad Gita, we will see this from a completely different perspective. It is then that we realize that Krishna is everything. That is what Vasudevam Sarvamiti means. And Krishna says, Samahalma Sudurlabha. They are very, very rare. Very, very rare. It's natural, isn't it? Millions of people won't think like that. They will always think in terms of that Krishna is separate, I am separate, they are separate, everyone is separate. So we understand this consciousness builds up inside. There are this fear, or we're talking about the snake, as I mentioned before. Lot of it is coming from our mind, the fear of the snake. And when we are bitten by the snake, sometimes you will see people die instantaneously, isn't it? Actually, many people means those who are learned in the science of the snake bites, they say the most of the death is due to shock more than the poison itself. Because already they have decided, as soon as it's bitten, they said, oh, I'm finished, I'm going to die now. That is how they conclude straight away. And by then, the soul also has to leave that body because of the situation inside the body. Now, in order to explain this, if you don't have that thoughts like that, what will happen? Because not that all snakes are poisonous, not that all people die out of. Sometimes the snakes that's bitten were not poisonous, but still the victim died due to that. Once it so happened that a snake and a frog spoke to each other. The snake told the frog, you see how powerful I am, I bite and they die. Frog said, no, you cannot kill. When I bite, they die, he said. The frog says to the snake. So between them, they have decided to make an experiment. Who can kill the man by biting? So they decided that both of us will go, and when I bite, you can watch. The snake said to the frog. The frog said, okay, and then you know what has happened. And then the frog said, when I bite, you can watch, said, fine. So both of them went and stayed near a street and was standing there. A man came through that way. Immediately, what did the snake do? Snake went and had bitten the man and went into the, being frightened that he'd be killed, he went into the bushes, escaped from there. So the man turned back, felt that he was bitten by something. He looked, oh, it was a frog. He thought, oh, it's nothing serious. And he walked off. Nothing happened to him. After some time, the snake came back. The next person came. So this time, both the snake was going to watch and frog was going to bite, isn't it? The frog had bitten and frog moved into the bush straight away. The snake was lying there. Snake hasn't bitten. But the man, he felt that he was bitten by something and looked, and he saw the snake there. He felt, I'm finished. Now, I'm finished. Immediately collapsed. They took him to the hospital to do the treatment. But by then it was too late. With the shock he died. So what he's saying is that the how our mental perception is has a big value on these things also. It's not purely something happens that snake bites and you die straight away. That there is other aspects also attached to that. That's why you'll find that in the treatment of the snake bites and all that, these factors are taken into account very seriously. And there's different processes of doing that. So here you will notice in this, Krishna says, Mayatadamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsani sarvabhudani nachaham teshu avastidaha. I have no role to play in any of these things, but I am in everything, Krishna says. Now, in order to explain this, when Arjuna did not understand these words properly, Krishna comes, brings out with another verse, which is the next verse. We'll discuss that next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.